KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
At 8 o'clock, it's partly cloudy and 67 degrees in Atlantic. We look for skies to be partly cloudy to cloudy today, with a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms, a high around 75. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News, brought to you by Robinson True Value Hardware, serving Southwest Iowa with the best hardware for over 75 years. In local news, the Atlantic Community School District's Board of Directors held their annual organizational meeting Wednesday evening and conducted regular business afterward. During their session, the board elected Allie Bruckner as president for the 2016-17 school year and Jenny Williams as vice president. Mary Beth Fast was reappointed as the district's business manager and Olivia Newberg was reappointed as treasurer. The board also voted to continue to hold its regular meetings at 5:30 p.m. on the second Wednesday of each month and their work session on the fourth Wednesday of the month, also at 5:30 unless otherwise noted. During their work session this September 28th, the board will hear from three firms who will offer their services in the search for the next Atlantic School District superintendent, who will succeed Dr. Michael Amstein when he retires next year.
We invited G. Tryon and Associates, Ray and Associates, and McPherson and Jacobson. What I basically did was I set up about three 25-minute sessions with about 5 minutes in between for them to come in, do a short presentation, and then provide you an opportunity to ask questions.
The board will discuss their proposals afterward and vote on whether to hire one of the three firms during their regular meeting in October or proceed with the search on their own with guidance from the Iowa Association of School Boards and other knowledgeable educational officials. In other business, Superintendent Amstein thanked the community for passing the VPEPL, the voter-approved physical plant and equipment levy, on Tuesday, which allows for a combination of property and income surtaxes charges to help meet the district's needs. He also issued a special thank you to community members Kip Harris, Hal Gronewald, Glenn Smith, and Jennifer Satoff for their efforts to educate the public about the VPEPL and getting out the vote.
They did a lot of work in the community. They did a lot of work amongst our school employees, and I think because of their efforts, we were successful in doing that. So I'm pleased that election went well.
Amstein said also enrollment is up this year by some 50 to 60 students, which he hopes holds until October the 1st, when the district can certify its enrollment numbers to the state, which in turn helps determine how much money the district receives in the form of aid. The Atlantic School Board also heard from the district's Justin Williams, who asked them to consider employing students in certain school-related multi-occupational positions.
There have been at least two board meetings where members of the board have suggested we do this. It has not happened. There have been various reasons as to why this has happened, none of which I think are credible. There are schools that do what we are asking. Waukee is one. They employ students. They get paid. They get credit. One has gotten paid credit and college credit. The school district is one of the largest employers in the community, and I think we need to make this happen.
He said that the work-study multi-occupational program was last utilized about 6 years ago.
It's hard to expect our public to employ our kids if we're not willing to do the same thing. You know, and the other thing that goes along with that is this. They're cheaper. We can pay them a less rate than what we pay the adults. And who better to learn from than the people who are working here?
The board will discuss the request at their next regular meeting and possibly act on the matter at that time. And the Atlantic School Board Wednesday approved a request from Dan Vargason, Spanish teacher and Spanish club sponsor, for students to begin a 21-month fundraising effort for their next trip to Costa Rica. The trip is planned for the 2018 school year. The Iowa Supreme Court heard arguments Wednesday on a lawsuit brought by the president of the state's largest public employees union and multiple Democratic lawmakers against Governor Terry Branstad over the closing of the mental health institutes in Clarinda and Mount Pleasant. Branstad used his line item veto of the spending plan to keep both places open. Attorney Mark Hedberg argued against the governor's action.
We feel that the governor did not exercise his veto appropriately, and even if it was appropriate, it should have no effect in closing down the institute.
He says the governor's veto extended beyond the funding issue and wiped out the law creating the facilities.
We believe that the statute that created these facilities still exists, and that was a condition on that appropriation. If they wanted to shut it down, he should have, instead of vetoing it, sent it back to the legislature for them to modify the statute itself, not simply the appropriation.
Justice David Wiggins, though, questioned Hedberg's reading of the law.
Let's talk about the statutory obligation. What in the statute requires those two locations to remain open?
Well, the statute itself, 226.1, we believe, says specifically the state hospitals for persons with mental illness shall be designated as follows. and it identifies four facilities, including the two he shut down.
Justice Brent Apple also questioned Hedberg on the issue.
You're going back and saying that the item includes the appropriation measure and pre-existing law.
Correct.
I didn't find any other authority for that proposition.
Well, the proposition
I think you didn't either.
I didn't, but the suggestion is you can't alter. It's part of the budgetary process. In this case, he has altered a statute, not simply reduced the funding. He's altered the statute by literally taking out two specific institutions that are required, we believe, by law to exist. So therefore, he has altered the statute.
The justices then asked if the law simply named the facilities and did not require that there be four.
We don't believe it's just a naming statute. We believe that it requires these four institutes to service these regions.
Attorney Jeffrey Thompson presented the other side of the case. Justice Wiggins asked Thompson if the governor went beyond his power to veto funding measures.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's a difference.
Why not?
Well,
he's closing two institutions that allegedly have some naming, have some meaning because they're specifically noted in a code chapter.
Well, he also has a duty to faithfully execute his budgeting responsibilities.
Thompson said the law regarding mental health institutions does not have any specific requirements for closing them, unlike in some other cases, such as the requirements of the Board of Regents to close the school for the blind.
It says you got to do a report. You got to submit it. There are certain steps you have to go through. You have to present it to the legislature. The legislature has to vote. You have to wait 2 years. It says what you have to do for closure.
Thompson says lawmakers have altered the statute, allowing the mental health institutes through the years to allow for such things as the superintendent renting out space to nonprofits. And Thompson says there has been a change in how the service for mental health patients is now delivered, away from set facilities to services that are provided at homes and communities.
Because that's a better way to provide services for mental health.
Thompson was also asked if the justices should even rule on the issue since the facilities are now closed and no money has been appropriated to reopen them. He said the issue is definitely moot.
The legislature doesn't think it's that important because they didn't try to re-up the issue in the most recent legislative session. There is no appropriation. There was no attempt at appropriation. But I also think it doesn't meet the great public importance exception.
The facility at Clarinda opened in 1888, while the Mount Pleasant facility opened the year the Civil War broke out in 1861. Both closed last year. The Iowa Supreme Court also heard arguments Wednesday about whether 10 drainage districts in northwest Iowa should keep their immunity from paying damages if the Des Moines Water Works is successful in a federal lawsuit over high nitrate levels in the Raccoon River. Des Moines Water Works attorney John Landy told the justices the granting drainage districts protection from liability is outdated.
This case is about responsibility for nitrate pollution in the Raccoon River. The drainage districts claim they have no responsibility. But the physical and legal reality is that drainage districts own and operate government infrastructure that pollutes the drinking water of 500,000 central Iowans.
Landy says the drainage districts in Sac, Calhoun, and Buena Vista counties are no longer just removing water from the land. They're now posing a health concern by removing pollutants and putting them into the waterway. He said the drainage districts could make changes.
The remedy in this case would be very similar to the remedy for a permit that drainage districts would be required to obtain, which would involve objective metrics and measurements of their discharge of pollution and then efforts to mitigate that pollution.
Landy was asked what type of remedies the districts could use.
The drainage districts could change the way their ditches are structured. They could change their end of pipe infrastructure to stop water flowing during low flow periods. There are a number of practices. As a practical matter, that drainage districts could implement that wouldn't necessarily require the drainage districts to stop draining the land. Pollution does not have to be an inherent part of drainage in the same way that alteration of flow and moving water off the land has to be.
Landy said the drainage district could use a series of levies and assessments to pay for the changes. Attorney Michael Reck represents the drainage districts. He says the immunity for the districts has been upheld numerous times. Justice Mark Apple questioned whether there should be change.
You know, maybe in 1900 this was right. Sovereign immunity was very much alive then. Tell us why it still should prevail today.
Rex says one of the reasons is that lawmakers haven't moved to make a change.
Because the legislature has left it in place. And if the legislature wanted to overturn this doctrine, they could have. Second, it needs to stay in place because this is not the proper proceeding to bring up that particular question.
He said the way drainage districts works have not changed. They either increase water flow or slow the water flow.
You, the downstream owners, have to understand that drainage may change in the future, that it may increase, it may decrease. You take it as the servient estate.
The Iowa Supreme Court will determine if the districts have to pay damages if that is the outcome of the federal lawsuit. The lawsuit is expected to go to court in June of 2017. The news was brought to you by Robinson True Value Hardware, serving Southwest Iowa with the best hardware for over 75 years. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.